here in FPH for a discussion about sex.
So should we get started? Yeah, maybe so. Let's all stare at Fan.
Upstaged by food.
Of course, I knew that would happen. This is supposed to be totally informal, so please feel free to get up, get food, come down here, put more questions in the fruit top, which is our loving fishbowl. My name is Jamie Citron. I am a intern in Merrill, and I felt due to recent events that have been happening on the Hampshire campus, it was appropriate that the Hampshire community, or whatever cross-section of it would like to, should get together and talk about sex. Because I don't know if anybody read the little blurb on the Daily Jolt. I was supremely proud of it. It's weird, it's odd, it's funny, it's really quite humorous. But everyone's always looking for it, getting it, talking about it, asking for it, giving it, receiving it. You know, someone brought up the song, Let's Talk About Sex, Baby. Well, I think we spend a majority of our time talking about it, thinking about it, or having it in one incarnation or another. And for something that surprisingly takes up so much of our time, most of the talking is done in small groups. So I thought if we could open that up and really talk about everything about sex, from how to give good oral sex, to what are good pickup lines on a first date, to please give me a definition of consent, and how do I know if I've been sexually assaulted, what can I do about it? Not only can we have fun and eat a lot of really good Atkins food, thanks to the office, but we could maybe get some things out in the open and make a change for the better on the Hampshire campus and beyond. So I'm sitting up here only because I'll be reading the questions and I'll probably move over there sooner or later. If you have any more questions and you want them to be confidential, please feel free to signal to me or throw them in here, and I'll make sure that it's all switched around so no one knows it's your question. If not, please at any time feel free to raise your hand or just let's not do the raising hand thing for conversation, but at any good point where you feel there could be a shift in energy, please bring your question up. We'll start with what we have in here and just let the conversation flow. We have the space till 5. We can go a little bit longer or shorter, it doesn't matter. And like I said, please feel free to get up, get down, get dirty, whatever you want to do. But let's get started. So, real quick. Speaking. This Tuesday at 8:30 p.m., a safe space to speak about your experiences with sexual violence. Great way to extend the conversation we have here. Come and connect with others. In the CA space located above the Women's Center in Enfield, your side door near the basketball. All genders welcome. Food and drinks will be provided. A confidential, informal, no-pressure space to speak out about, against sexual violence and be heard. So I think there are a bunch of flyers around here. We have like a CA corner. And I'm sure they can. Ooh, we have two of them. Who would be more than happy to answer more questions about that. So I'm going to pull up the first question, and please feel free to, you know, take this in any direction you want. And I actually did pull out the first question. Okay, that I thought I was going to. Here's a good one for the guys. Do guys really not know the difference between a real and fake orgasm? Gentlemen. This is not my area of expertise. Guys, it's uneasy.
I think this brings up a better point of why are women faking orgasms?
Good point.
Very good point.
Good point. Not conducive to any kind of good communication or...
Well, sometimes if you just want to hurry up and get it over with...
Well, that's
true. Well, that's not the way it should
be. Sometimes if it's not good, it's not good. And the only way to get a guy off you is just be like, oh! And that's, you know, I mean, sometimes it's just the easiest thing to do.
And that's a hard thing to say to someone without taking an orgasm. Like, oh, this is really not good sex for me. Why don't you just leave, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
There could be tact, though. You could say just like, I don't think I'm going to go right now. No.
I don't know.
Don't fake orgasm.
And you don't just say you're getting tired.
Exactly. But I think about the faking orgasms, I think a part of it has to do with suspension of disbelief. I mean, the girl's like, orgasm, you want to believe it's real.
So, ladies, basically what I'm hearing is that it's easier to fake it and get it over with than be like, you just get the hell off. Yeah. I have to be honest, I've faked interest before. Not quite the same thing, but I think it comes close.
I faked an orgasm before.
Please, details, I'd like to know.
No, for the same reasons.
Yeah, I've heard of guys faking orgasms, which I think is an even more interesting phenomenon, because I think that kind of calls into account, you know, the idea of masculinity, and like that a lot of, there's that kind of stereotypical image, I think, in some guys' minds of really macho guys that I know, like the bigger orgasm that they have, like the more cum that they ejaculate, the more of a man that they are. Like the fact that they can ejaculate and as opposed to not or whatever is more important to them than the actual act. So I've heard of guys faking that too. So what do you guys think about that? Like, where do you think differences are between women faking and men faking? Both do it, just maybe one more than the other.
Well, I think people talk about women faking orgasms so much more, and I mean, that also brings up like the idea that, I mean, why do people believe that men are always going to have an orgasm? Like, just as much as, you know, a woman is not always going to have an orgasm, it's just not always going to happen.
Why does a man orgasm have to be like the end? Why can't, you know, like that feels like it has to always be the end of, you know, like, sex can't end without the man orgasming, which is, I don't think necessarily should be true.
Can sex go past the man orgasm? Or do you need it now?
Hopefully.
Yeah, I would say so.
Well, why does orgasm have to be the goal? As it usually is.
Well, what are some other goals for sex besides?
Where's what?
Release. What are some other goals for sex besides release?
Pleasure.
Intimacy. Yeah.
Good. I'll take it as we're done with that one. Yeah. Do you think we should move the food up and squish, condense, or are we happy where we are?
I think it'd be better. Personally, I think it'd be better.
All right, I'm going to get your asses down here. If you don't mind, then it's just the first couple rows. We'll bring food with us. That way we can see each other, huh?
Yeah, that was my favorite.
Yeah.
All of it. Get a little bit of it next to the bed, and it, you know, gets smeared into the carpet. And then a few weeks later, the whole room smells like
Well, have you ever seen that movie Varsity Blues? The girl comes out in the pink bikini. When I saw that, when I was like 15 or 16, I'm sitting in the theater with my friend. There was like barely anybody else in there, and the girl comes out. She's wearing it, and then I hear somebody in the theater go, "I gotta try that."
It doesn't work.
It melts off, if I remember correctly. Not the movie.
It seems like there would be too much cream at that point, too. Sick to your stomach.
Hmm?
Yeah, that'd be a little much. Yeah. To dive into. So,
yeah, some of us are vegan. Some of us are
the dairy also goes bad.
Yeah.
Well, I don't think it's meant to be there for multiple
hours. Excuse me while I sit here in my whipped cream bikini.
I'm just going to do my reading. Yeah. Have you ever seen the cover of the Herb Alpert album, Whipped Cream and Other Delights? It's this woman in this, like, mountain of whipped cream. It's pretty gross. You can find it, like, every thrift store.
So that we should find you in the whipped cream. Eat your way inside.
There was another half piece.
Next question. We have two very good questions. One, could everyone name one non-mainstream sexual technique with a funny name? non-mainstream sexual technique with a funny name.
What are we saying
is
mainstream?
Yeah.
Should we just find
sex that you'd identify with the Midwest?
Hey!
Hey, man! There's some serious case about touching on it, let me tell you.
I'm just bitter, I just came back from Wisconsin.
Well, Wisconsin.
It happens.
I apologize.
The upper Midwest.
Should you cheese head? Cheese.
Cheese
so well. So.
Cheese whiz?
Oh.
time you're through the cheese whiz, you'd be tired.
You know? Squid is really sexual.
Something
food.
That dissolves easily.
Mm.
That's
okay,
so
we're...
Anyway.
Well, no, I think it'd be funny if we keep coming back to food.
It'll be the theme for the...
We'll have a segment with this, and we'll just call it Food and Sex. Come share your newest techniques. One non-mainstream sexual technique with a funny name.
I guess I would say that non-mainstream, just for argument's sake, would probably be like not just missionary or just like doggy or girl on top or, you know, like those basic positions kind of thing and something
between probably a consenting heterosexual couple would be considered, I'd say,
yeah.
By the vast majority is mainstream.
Yeah.
But even just basic, you know, queer sex, like, that's fairly mainstream.
Yeah, all sex.
Has anybody ever heard of gibbling? Is that it? It's like you, I heard about this, I'm not sure how it worked, but take a piece of bacon and tie a string to it, and then somebody swallows it, and then you're having sex, and then right at the point of ejaculation, or when anybody's about to come, pull the bacon out, and it, like, the gag reflex kind of sends, like, chills through your body, and it's supposed to, like, double the orgasm, and I'm not sure.
That's like those serious people that hang themselves, or, like, fake hang themselves.
What's that called?
Yes, rage stuff.
Asphyxiation.
Yeah. It's kind of like the same.
Are people's orgasms not good enough for them to be done? I've never understood, like... Why are people, like, risking death to, like, I don't know,
orgasm.
I find orgasms, like, good enough to not want to stain myself.
Or shove bacon down your throat, pull back up. What if you overcook the bacon?
That could just get painful.
Oh, God.
And Joel did
doesn't your gag reflex going off all the time while you have this string down your throat? Like, that's how it's really
annoying.
You
need to, like, a pull
thread,
maybe.
Wouldn't it break the thread? And then wouldn't it be kind of weird to have this, like, big, unchewed piece of...
That doesn't sound safe.
Okay, let's not talk about it.
So we're supposed to pick our favorite, or just something that we know.
Just one that we know.
The term.
Well, one more thing, I have a question that came out of that. Does anyone actually know anybody who has lost their gag reflex? Because I think it's a myth.
Yeah,
I don't believe it.
The other night.
Oh, God. No, she's not born with a gag reflex.
No, but I saw him deep throat his fist, and that convinced me.
It's possible to, like, suppress your gag reflex, but I don't think you can really lose it.
That's right. I knew somebody who said he didn't have one. Like,
at all.
Ever.
Any funny names, or shall we move on?
Teabagging
and
stuff like that?
Yeah. I've never heard of that one.
You've never really heard
gross.
Of teabagging?
Nope, not from in.
Can you explain
that?
What
was
teabagging?
It's when a guy, like,
you should see the movie
basically,
Tucker.
Like, bounces balls down on someone's face. Teabagging. Oh, yeah. No. What it is you're supposed to... I think it's when a girl's sleeping and her mouth falls open, you're supposed to go and dip your balls in her mouth, and then... Oh, I didn't hear that much detail. I just heard that, like, you squat down in someone's face and just kind of dip. Yeah.
I guess if they're asleep or awake, that brings some...
As far as I've, like, read and heard, seen, it is more of a, like, in a homosexual community than a... guy doing it to a girl, you know? I don't know. That's the only time I've ever seen it talked about.
It's
I've heard about it talked about in the
heterosexual
community. Have you?
Yeah.
What's
the
name now?
Teabagging.
I think I was almost teabagging.
Just
happened
to be walking down that street one day.
Made a mistake, fall asleep
with a stoop. Next thing you know, there's some guy about to good to have. That and tossed salad.
Yeah.
That's disgusting. I don't want to talk about that.
It's just rimming, right? Like, it's just another word for rimming.
Yeah.
With salad dressing.
Yeah. And, and Red Wings, getting your wings.
What's that?
That's really disgusting. That's when the guy goes down on the girl when she has her period, keeps it in his mouth, and then when they kiss, they exchange.
Oh, see, that's just not safe. Like, getting a mouthful of menstrual blood, not safe.
Still, even before that, that's bad. That's disgusting. That's just awful, but people do it.
Not to sound, like, mean or anything to you, but maybe we should try to not say anything disgusting, because you never know who might like what. Not to say I'm in
Sorry.
It's a good point. It's a good point. Yeah. There are definitely some, I've been some issues brought about the safety of that. But that
yeah, I mean, that's something.
So.
It's
good to say it was unsanitary or something.
All right. And the next question, I think we can kind of just take a poll on it. It seems to be rather unanimous. I might blush. I might turn the sheet of this paper, so just be aware. Should you tell somebody before you come on their face? It's a very valid question.
Should the yeses raise their hand?
Oh, are we too sure?
I think that's fairly unanimous. I'm very glad to see it.
I think that depends on how far, like if you're in a long-term relationship. No, seriously.
Maybe you're for aware that it happens on a regular, it's something you do on a regular basis.
I think that
depends.
Like, it's not like every time, I think that there's an issue where at some point you have to accept that in a long-term relationship people do unexpected stuff, or else you'll be like, can I do this? How about now? What about this? And all of sex will be raising your hand asking a question.
Yeah, but coming on your face is like...
Yeah, but I'm not talking about every situation. I'm talking about a longer-term relationship in which this is not an uncommon practice. Like, it's not like...
But still, I just think it's kind of almost out of courtesy. Yeah, exactly. It's just like, you're there and you're doing your thing, whatever. Like, let's say you're going down on the guy or something, and then he's all it takes is you, like, I want to come, like, usually it's more a phrase like, where do you want it? Then I'm gonna come on your face. Is that okay? You know,
or like it's coming. Like, yeah, you stay
exactly.
Where you are. You run away.
And I think that in any type of situation, whether it be a long-term relationship or not, it's just more of a. Because I mean, what if they just don't want that? You know, and it's just kind of again just courtesy. I think you can definitely still spice up your sex life without just splatting on someone's face. I'm giving a warning. You know,
I think it might be different if someone like had flat out like rejected or like didn't want that to happen and like said so multiple times than if someone like enjoyed that or like if it was something
right,
both
well,
parties
this is,
enjoyed.
That's why I said it depended. It's not.
I guess, and also there are ways of asking without asking. You know, like, I mean, again, if you're going down on somebody and then he pulls out and he's aiming right to you or, like, attempts to aim, you know, then that would be a way of asking without having to actually stop and say, look, this is what I'm about to do. Is that cool with you, you know? Because then a girl can be like, you know, just slyly move the guy's penis elsewhere, you know?
I think that brings up a very good point, though, about power dynamics.
Yeah.
What is sexy about orgasming on your partner's face?
Good point.
I mean, that's it. Like,
why do you want to see that schmear dripping down the nose? I'm just asking personally, because I feel that it creates an uneven power dynamic.
My guess is that our generation, like, doesn't, I don't know, I think that we're, I think it probably has to do with people watching a lot of porn, and, like, that's their image of what sex is. And, like, that's such a part of porn, unfortunately.
That's just some reason people shave their pubes off.
Yes, what? Okay, that's another question. Write a question down about shaving. Don't get it. But that's just.
Some people like it.
I don't know.
I had a friend who did it because she felt it chafed, but she didn't shave.
But she didn't shave?
Yeah.
Well, that's stubble and all that stuff.
No, so you just keep it shaved.
I just personally enjoy having myself shaved.
It just seems like a stubble would be.
That's why you keep up with it.
Yeah, you just gotta keep on top of it. Properly moisturized, you know.
At least, I mean, to me, the idea of shaved pubes makes me really uncomfortable because, like, I feel like children don't have pubic hair. Adults have pubic hair. Like, I mean, you know, I don't have a problem if you choose to do that, but I know that it would make me really uncomfortable to be with a partner that didn't have pubes. Like, I don't know. Like, I just feel like an adult should have them, so.
But then also, I mean, like Jamie was talking about the power issue. I mean, is that what's behind when a man, when your partner, you know, a man, woman, whoever, says, shave, you know, I'd like it if you were there down there. Is that,
that's not that decision. That's your own decision. Thing,
but I don't think that's it.
No.
Yeah, because awesome. I mean, I'm shaving myself, but I would also prefer to shave as well. It's just a preference.
Yes. Just a question.
Well, also, power play, I think, is bad, because I feel like it's one thing to, like, I don't know, consciously do so during sex, and another thing to have, like, a big old, like, patriarchal love affair, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, I think that there are, like, different ways that people can use power in sex that aren't necessarily, like, oh, he's oppressing her, she's oppressing her, he's oppressing him, you know?
Yeah.
Or whatever the case may be.
Yeah, I kind of have that issue with people. I know a lot of my friends are against pornography because they automatically assume that it's an objectification of women that are in pornography. You know, because of either how the positions are placed or how they see the woman being portrayed or whatever. And I just, sometimes, I mean, it's not, I don't want, in lack of better words, sometimes the woman wants to be objectified, and that should be okay. You know, sometimes the woman wants to just lay there and let the guy do what he wants and likes being taken control of, and that should be viewed as something that's okay. It's not always bad to be the object.
But I feel like maybe the problem that comes up in terms of pornography, which I'm not against pornography, but because it's mostly it's not necessarily mostly consumed by heterosexual men, but it is produced in general, you know, heterosexual porn is produced for heterosexual men, and so when it is this, like, extreme objectification of women, you know, like, I was looking through something with some friends the other day, and there was some ad for, like, phone sex, and it was like, cum guzzling whores.
Yeah.
And I'm like, why do you want a cum guzzling whore? So I feel like because it's produced for heterosexual men, you know, and that is the, you know, group that has power in our society, it does make for a weird, very strange power dynamic. But, you know, there's plenty of stuff that does have stronger women too.
I recently had anal sex for the first time and really enjoyed it, but I still know nothing about it. Can you give me any tips, warnings, and recommendations about it?
Just lube.
Yeah. Lubrication is key as far as I understand.
Why? I'm just going to play devil's advocate.
Because since that's not an area of your body that's naturally lubricated, when it gets aroused, there could be some sort of friction which could cause, like, cuts or bleeding, and then that would cause unsafe sex, and the cycle would go on. You know? So more lubrication, you gotta provide that lubrication that would be naturally there if you were just having regular.
This thin, sensitive tissue, it needs to be taken care of, as far as I know.
And if you switch from anal to vaginal sex, you should switch condoms. I don't remember the words.
Because of bacteria. Don't use spermicide. Like, any lube that has oxalate.
Can you say that a little louder?
Don't use lube that has oxalate in it when you're having sex. It's hard. You're doing something wrong.
Very good point.
Yes.
Very good point. I think
suck it up because it'll just make it worse. You know,
it's so much more important to protect yourself in the long run than it is to impress someone in the short term.
Mm-hmm. Very good. And I think there's a myth out there that anal sex is supposed to hurt a little bit or a lot every time, which it doesn't have to. And then just some regular pleasure techniques that I've been privy to here. You know, I'm sure everyone has heard of the prostate gland. It's 6 inches up in the rectum, or whatever the actual canal is called, I don't know. And is a sexual button, for lack of a better term, and men can orgasm from it. It can also be pleasured from the outside on the area between the anus and the testicles if slight pressure is administered.
And
yeah,
that's considered an LG spot, right?
The prostate?
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Anybody else on that one?
It's really interesting, though. How is it that something externally can stimulate something so far internally?
Good question. I just know it works. I think it has to do with pressure. Mm-hmm. Same reason. I've been. Women have informed me that they have orgasmed. I've not heard this many times, but I have heard of. I've heard firsthand of women orgasming from dry humping. I don't know if they're lying, but I've heard it as well.
No, I've experienced
that. Yeah.
Okay, like I said, I know nothing about that gender. I leave it up to you guys.
That could definitely happen, but I think that's a little. But that doesn't really answer the question because usually, well, not. I don't know for sure, but if I ever did orgasm from dry humping, it was a clitoral orgasm,
yeah,
and not a vaginal,
yeah,
orgasm.
Mm-hmm.
So it's pretty much right on the surface, and there's just a layer of fabric or whatever separating, or two layers of fabric separating that contact. And to be able to hit the male G-spot that's, again, still like,
mm-hmm,
6, you know, however much is it? 6 inches?
Yeah, 6 inches.
6 inches up in the canal. That's some heavy-duty pressure.
Yeah. I mean, I think I've read the way they believe, you know, the female G-spot works is that it's connected to your clitoris, like through, I don't know, nerves and tissues and things. So it's probably a similar thing.
Mm-hmm.
Bridge of nerves.
Ah, those nerves.
Next question. I get so scared every time I bring one of these up. whoever wrote this question is going to have to do some explaining, if that's okay. That's fine, just throw the name. Antioch College has a very rad sex policy. How can we have something so great here? We'll need to explain Antioch College's sex policy. Okay.
Well, I read something about it recently, and I guess they started their, it was in response to a number of sexual assaults on their campus in the early 90s, and basically when two people have any kind of, you know, just not even sex, but just like when they're together. Like if I was with Sabina and we were on a date and, you know, I want to like be with Sabina and I want to hold her hand, like I have to say, can I hold your hand? And, you know, and then we can hold hands. And I can say, can I touch your hair? Like anything that you do, and it's not, you know, but it's not like an extreme thing. Like it becomes part of the, you know, courtship or whatever of like being like, can I touch your hair? And, you know, and then it becomes okay. It just, so many issues of consent, like, if you have to do that, if that becomes part of your, you know, how you believe that you should act towards other people, then, you know, so many issues, I feel like, are lost, because it's just inherent that you're going to ask if something's okay. Mm-hmm. And the woman that wrote this article that I was reading said that, you know, It was just really positive in the way people interacted there sexually. It was very different than, you know, when she'd had any kind of, you know, dates or relations or whatever with people outside of Antioch. And I just think that that would be a really, like, if we could implement something based on that at Hampshire, I mean, I think, you know, it would take a couple of years. So I don't think that, like, next year suddenly everybody's going to be asking if they can touch my hand. But I think that if we could start something, some kind of policy similar to that, like that could be a really like revolutionary thing for Hampshire.
Well, how do you enforce that?
I think the thing is that it's not enforced, but I think that it's just sort of the basis of how people interact.
Well, it also brings up the question of why aren't we asking in the first place?
Yeah.
And, you know,
making sure that someone's consensual in any kind of intimate act should be, you know, common ground. And, you know, to start making that an awareness campaign on campus, I think is a good idea, because all you do say is, you know, is this okay with you?
But you just know, like with friends and acquaintances, like, can I give you a hug? Well, I think, like, those are boundaries that aren't, that some people, like, don't like having breached.
Yeah.
I definitely agree with the point that you guys are bringing up, that, you know, consent is an issue, and how to make sure, like, make really, really sure that consent is given and accepted and all that is really important. But at the same time, I think that if that is that kind of policy is, you know, put through, then it takes away a lot of the magic of courting somebody if you always prepare them. You know, some of like the greatest moments of my being, you know, crushing on somebody or whatever is when they are sitting in a chair and we're watching a movie and then all of a sudden they're holding my hand, you know, or something like that. And like, it would miss out on a lot if you had to stop and be like, oh, can I hold your hand? So, you know, and I think a lot of the magic would be gone too.
Well, but I think it brings in a different kind of magic. Like, I think that there's always, like, a certain nervousness of when you're with somebody and, like, thinking, like, is it okay if I hold, you know, her hand, because I don't know if, like, that's what they want or not. And I think that it would take away a lot of the nervousness that is not necessarily good. And I think that, I don't know, I mean, and people do things all the time where, like, you know, they take your hand or they touch your back or, you know, you really don't want them there. And I think that if the idea of having it as a policy is that it's also, if somebody really does, like, assault or harass somebody, it becomes much easier to be able to say, they didn't do this. They didn't ask my permission. And I agree.
I think something's really lost in losing the body language dance. I mean, I think that's part of what makes courting beautiful to me. It's like the little pushes and pulls that become really relevant because that's how you're reading each other. I don't know. I think I'd really lose a lot if everything was verbal.
I also think that...
Go ahead.
I think that it's underestimating people. I mean, if you go in to hold someone's hand, and they don't want you to, they can say, don't hold my hand. They can deny consent. If you think that they're okay with that and they're not, they can tell you. And I think that that's the case in a lot of things, that there is, that, as you said, the sort of push and pull where you sort of explore how comfortable people are with something. And that's how part of, and not everyone knows how comfortable they are with any specific thing, and that's part of the way you find out, is those little sort of pushes and pulls from either side. And if somebody doesn't want you to hold their hand, then they'll tell you to stop. Now, this doesn't apply to something like you're naked and making out and suddenly you jump on top of the person and push yourself in. Like, that's different. But at a level like this, where it's, there's nothing lost, and where they can say no before anything is really going on. I mean, you know, if you kiss someone and they don't want to be kissed, they can pull back and say, I don't want you to kiss me.
I guess a lot of it depends on your perception of what is crossing a line of physical intimacy that's too personal. Like, where is that line where doing it without asking is crossing a line? I don't really, I mean, it's probably on a person-to-person basis, and if that's so, then how do you know what another person's line is?
For argument's sake, since I completely agree that the line is different for everybody, and there are people who are obviously unhappy with the current system of the body language dance, and then I'll kick you out. There are people who would be I don't think the term uncomfortable is correct, but for lack of a better word, I'll use it, with the implementation of this exact policy. What's the middle ground? What would the middle ground consist of, maybe? I think that's the hardest question.
Yeah, it's a hard question. Because since it is so subjective, I don't think there's any middle ground that would ever completely satisfy everybody.
I think at some point you just have to deal with people, and they're going to be assholes, and they're going to be people who aren't.
Yeah.
And it's your the way you set up relationships with people that's going to set where these lines are. And when people cross the lines, that's... I guess what I'm trying to say is that people who are going to cross the lines are assholes, and they're out there. And it's the way you set up your relationships with people where you can minimize the chances that this is going, who you're dealing with.
Yeah, it kind of almost forces us to have this, unfortunately, I'm not saying I agree with this, but unfortunately kind of had this naive hope that if someone went to touch you in some way and you didn't want them to, that they would stop.
But why do you have to wait until your line is crossed to tell someone?
You can also inform someone of your line.
Yeah.
And body language is doing that. Like, as you lean in to kiss someone, you're about to lean in to kiss them for the first time. As soon as you start that leaning in, you probably have an idea of where that's going.
Or even before that, even like, if you're interested in somebody and you and they ask you out on a date, I mean, if you want to be so bold as to say flat out right there, okay, yeah, I'll go on a date with you, but just let me know, I don't kiss on the first date, or I don't, you know, whatever. I mean, there's plenty of ways to go about that, but again, because it's such a sticky situation, you know, there's really never going to be a definitive answer for it.
I think it's hard because, like, I feel like there is another question that I'm having trouble articulating that I feel like is really relevant, and I think it's, like, that there's pressure involved in certain situations, and, like, even if someone asks for my consent, like, that doesn't necessarily minimize it. I think that this might not be as relevant of college as it is of high school. Because I feel, well, I don't know, I mean, rumors do spread really fast in Russia. But I think that it's definitely like, I don't know, I feel like when women don't consent, or when people don't consent, they're often painted as like uptight bitches. Or like, what's the harm in like me like holding you, or what's the harm in like us just making out a little, or if I take your shirt off. Whatever, and I feel like there are so much like internal pressure as well as external pressure that like weighs on people's decisions that like we totally have no means of addressing. Because I don't think anyone on this campus is like, or like I can't think of any like system or any like thing at this campus that is addressing like, you know, that kind of stuff. And I can't think of how it would be addressed. It's hard because, like, that is very subjective stuff. It definitely doesn't impact some people, but it impacts some people, and it impacts some people more than others.
I think what we're discussing is whether it's a single person's responsibility to set their boundaries, or whether it's the other person's responsibility to try and be aware of that person's boundaries. And so this is an issue that comes up with a lot of Hampshire discussions, is whether we're primarily responsible for, I mean, obviously we're primarily responsible for protecting ourselves, but whether somebody else should have responsibility for being aware of us.
Absolutely.
As well. You know what I mean? Like, there's that circle there where primarily in our society we're responsible for ourselves, and other people aren't so much responsible for being aware of where we are. But I don't really know. Like, in a way, there's definitely something to be said for a system in which you're responsible for establishing yourself, and then you are ultimately the person. There's nobody else to blame, you know? Like, if you don't take responsibility for yourself, then that's your fault.
Well, but that sounds like, I mean, you're almost blaming the victim because...
I just think
that you're responsible for yourself, but you're also responsible to not hurt others. You know, like, if I punch Stephanie in the face, like, it's not her responsibility to stop me from punching her.
Right. I'm not talking about violence or I mean, I think there's a very big difference between going in to kiss someone in an ambiguously consensual situation and I mean, there's a difference between grabbing someone and forcing them to kiss you and going in to kiss someone in an ambiguously consensual situation. You know, like, those to me are completely different scenarios because one is about power and one is about subtleties.
Well, there's power in ambiguous situations, though. Yeah. Like, power just isn't there when you acknowledge it, and that doesn't disappear when you're not acknowledging it.
I know. I don't know how to classify with a word the difference between the two. But to me, there is a very big difference between the two scenarios.
I guess I don't see, like, if you're going in slowly to kiss somebody, in a way that's kind of asking for consent, just non-verbally. I mean, like, there's a big difference in going in slowly to kiss somebody and grabbing them and kissing them. Like, there's a big difference there, just like there's a difference between, I don't know, like, that seems like, I'm not saying, maybe always verbal consent is important, but, like, that seems like a form of consent to me. And, like, whether or not that's an okay form of consent is a question, but, like, does consent always have to be verbal? Or, you know, I guess that's my question. I think that getting consent for anything you're going to do, I guess, is important to me. For me, in my experience, and at least as far as where I am in my life right now, that consent doesn't necessarily have to be verbal. But, you know, maybe it should always be verbal. I mean, I definitely see the point.
I think with that argument, too, that's undercutting the validity of body language and how important of communication, like to say that it always has to be verbal. And I think that's a very valuable communication with humans. And so to structure an argument around the idea that it's not a valid form of communication or even a valid in the sense of consent, I think is undermining the importance of body language for communication.
But unfortunately, that kind of consent is easily taken advantage of and is easily, like, thrown in the opposite way. I mean, there are people that do, like, yell rape when it didn't really happen for whatever reason, or yell sexual assault when it didn't really happen, and because there's no definitive consent, not whatever, then it could be easier for them to get away with that. But again, I still see your point. I am totally for that nonverbal, you know, but there are some people in our society that take advantage of those little loopholes, you know, and that's why this kind of discussion is so hard to find that answer to. How do we go about what's okay, what's not? How much are we responsible for being aware of other people? And how crazy is it that we have to constantly be aware of other people? That we can't just do what we feel at the moment that we feel it, that we have to stop and take a step back and be like, oh, wait a minute, but if I do this, they're going to react like that, or they may not, what am I going to do, da-da-da-da-da. It's kind of just what our world has turned into, and we all kind of have to take a piece of responsibility. Victims, not victims.
Yeah. One way I've found to, like, deal with it, and it's not by any means some sort of, like, end-all solution, but it's just kind of like, if I know that I want to kiss someone, I just, like, let them know that, like, that's where I'm at. And then kind of, like, whenever they or if ever that's where they are at, like, they know already.
How do you ever know?
I tell them. Or, you know, similar things.
I think, you know, there's a large extent to which people are responsible for making their intentions, boundaries, and all that clear. Nobody's a mind reader. You can't know when you're crossing. You don't know necessarily when you're supposed to ask. If someone kissed me without asking me, I wouldn't be in any way offended. Someone else might be. I think it's important to start with the general. I think that you can take so much for granted. Like, I think very few people are going to be really hurt if somebody tries to kiss them. I think it may be awkward, but nobody's going to be really freaked out, and if that's not the case, you start from there.
Well, I think the thing is, something else we're not talking about is, besides everyone having different boundaries, you're going to have different boundaries with different people in different situations. You know, I was at a party once, not at Hampshire, where I was not drunk. I had not drunk anything. A lot of the people there were. And there was this guy who kept walking around. Every time he would walk past me, he'd go like this, which really made me uncomfortable. And that was really not cool. And eventually I told him to stop, but he had done it like 5 times before I did. And you know, somebody walking past me and touching my shoulders isn't always gonna upset me. But in this situation, he was very threatening, and it did. And not every person is gonna have the nerve to tell them to stop.
Well, I think that's the place to start, is if people feel more comfortable.
I guess I feel like...
when they need to.
I feel personally that we have more of a responsibility not to hurt others than to make sure that we ourselves do not get hurt. I think that's why I personally think that having a policy where you do have to ask for consent is better than it being your own responsibility to tell someone to stop.
I think that'd be an interesting experiment for the campus, like for a week, to like have everyone like go around and not just have it be limited to like sexual relationships. And then like seeing Nikki across campus, be like, "Hi, Nikki, can I give you a hug? You know, like, what's up, Stephanie? I'm gonna tackle you." Or whatever my relationships are with certain people.
And what about those people that are really, really shy and can't ask somebody beforehand if they want to kiss them? Does that mean they never get any?
Well, would they have the nerve to just kiss then either?
It's much easier to just kiss someone.
Possibly,
sometimes it's easier to just do than to like take that moment to form it and actually question the person and be like, "I really want to kiss you. Can I kiss you?" You know, and as opposed to just, "Okay, I'm going to do it. Boom."
Well, I feel like
they could wait till the week's over.
I feel like the examples we're giving too of like people being in these situations are also really negative. And like, you know, we could be like on a really romantic date, and we could be, you know, I've already been like cuddling with Sabina or something, and be like, "Can I touch your hair?" And like, it could be just as cute as just doing it. Like, it could be just as romantic. I don't think that people are not inherently going to be like, "May I kiss you now?" So, you know, you might already be almost there and then asking for consent. Like, it doesn't have to, like, it's like, you know, people, as, you know, a peer educator for years, we've been trying to convince people that they need to stop and say, "Let's use a condom." And a lot of people claim, like, "Oh, that ruins the moment." I mean, I think this is getting into the exact same argument of, like, it ruins the moment, but it can be part of the moment.
But the consequences of a kiss are way, way
well, obviously,
lower.
But you know, I'm just using it as...
But not necessarily. That's also, like, you know, circumstance and person's own experiences. And you can be in a situation where someone kisses you and it is extremely violating. And it's really depending on the person's own experiences. And I feel like, you know, at this point in where we are in our society, like, if it comes down to a point where you need to be hypersensitive about people and... like consensual, like making sure that they are okay, then that's what you need to do for this moment because of where we live and what it's like for people and what like those circumstances are for people, what they could have gone through, what they potentially can go through. Like being violated is an extremely intense thing. And you know, if you need to take those things that you may find a little annoying now to make sure that someone's consensual, then I feel like that's our responsibility to do as human beings.
There's a big difference between like kissing someone, like some random person at a party or something, and someone that you're like hanging out in your bedroom with or like on a date with or something. And like,
why?
Both,
why?
Yeah. Because like there is a, like you go into situations with like, you go into all situations in life with some sort of like assessment of the situation. And like, if you're like cuddling with someone in like a bed, then like if people are claiming like the naivety that like kisses are never part of this situation or never acceptable in that situation, then like it's very different than just like walking up and like, kissing someone.
But I don't think it should always be assumed that.
I don't think it should always be assumed either, but I feel like we're talking about this. We're applying these things that do need to be strict in terms of like random person situations and like applying them or talking about applying them to strictly to like some unconsensual situations.
Yeah, to kind of bounce off of what he's saying and then to comment on what she's saying, I do agree that sometimes it could be part of the moment to ask for consent, and that it does maybe add this sort of romantic, like, courting kind of quality, you know, but we're not talking about sometimes. We're talking about applying this to every sort of physical contact that you're about to put on somebody. You're saying that this policy is to ask for any type of touch that you do to somebody. And that's why I'm bringing up these examples of, well, what about this situation?
Mm-hmm.
You know? And the only reason I'm doing that is because you're trying to apply this for all.
Right.
Absolutely. That's exactly where I'm coming from.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely agree with you that there are times that it doesn't have, that it can be add to it, and that it can be positive, and it can be a sharing experience between two people to have that kind of communication.
Mm-hmm.
But other times, I don't think it would be so bad if they didn't ask. That's all I'm saying.
Geeky example. Oh, sorry, somebody was speaking. Geeky example, but I know in several languages, to say that you've made love to them or had sex with them is to say that you've known them. And I think that's interesting because I think knowing and consent come from the same place. The amount of knowledge you have about a person beforehand, like if you're cuddling in a bed and maybe you've been rubbing noses and you know you've had that look several times and you've turned away. I love that look, by the way. It's my favorite thing in the universe. There's a certain amount of knowledge in that situation that says, I know that this person at the very least has some sort of feelings for me that is making their blood pressure rise just a little bit. What you do then may then be inherent on that knowledge. Whereas if you're at a party and you decide, you know, hot person against the wall, and you decide to ram yourself up against them and shove your tongue down your throat, that is lacking that knowledge. In that kind of situation, I personally could see where "May I kiss you?" gives you that knowledge. Just a personal thing. And if you want to food, just go.
I think that's the big thing, is that different situations really do call for different levels of this. And I think, you know, the first time two people have sex, verbal consent is definitely a good idea. But there are situations when, depending on your level of intimacy with a person, where it's not necessarily necessary or appropriate.
Just to throw it out there, I think there's a lot to be said in a different way for the anti-hack policy, in that as someone who's been a bungling oaf in all relationships, from friendships to sexual relationships, I mean, a lot of the time they're just situations in which you don't know, like you haven't had the experience to know, or you're not terribly good at reading people. And I think this is sounding kind of fascist, isn't it? I think it's not such a bad idea to have a system in place that helps to educate people as they go.
I say if you're uncomfortable doing something or verbalizing it, you shouldn't be doing it.
David.
Right, but that doesn't mean that someone's not going to do it to you.
Mm. Very true.
Do you guys think that a policy like this would change the people's behavior that would be problematic in the cases we're talking about?
Yeah, what in that article did they talk about success or whatever of the policy?
Well, this was really only about one woman's experience with that, and then moving away from Antioch and being assaulted and feeling like if the whole world was the way that it had been when she was at Antioch.
I feel like the people are going to take a running leap over boundaries. I'm not sure they're necessarily going to be affected by this. I think people who are conscientious people are going to be more likely to notice the subtleties, and if someone just says no, they're not going to continue.
I think the point of this, though, is not to change things necessarily for people that are conscientious. I mean, I would like to think of myself as a conscientious person that's not going to make anyone uncomfortable by trying to do something that they don't want. But I think the point is that people who are not, who, I don't know, are more socially inept or something and are not necessarily going to understand all those cues will have to ask, and if somebody says no, then they will stop. I don't think the point of this is for, you know, it's not for people that always know what's going on. Does that make sense?
I feel like it's not just like the socially inept that we're talking about here.
Right, no, but I think at the same time it would be for everyone too.
Yeah, makes sense. No. I feel like it's like that there's just certain times when like you feel like there's a connection just because you want there to be a connection. So you act on that connection that you think is there that isn't.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And that's what we're talking about. I mean that's like I think that's what this policy gets at. I can't finish that sentence.
So we're just driving toward better communication, like encouraging people toward better verbal communication.
I think it's hard to, like, I was thinking about, like, how you kind of drop, like, verbal consent as you, like, are in a relationship with someone and have sex with them on a regular basis. And I think that's, like, it makes sense in a way, but I think it's hard because that assumes that, like, both partners are, like, in some ways, like, open 24/7. Mm-hmm.
I don't think it does. I think that what it means is that you, as you get deeper in a relationship with someone, it assumes that the people are comfortable enough with each other that they're going to be able to tell you when your approach or whatever isn't appropriate before they are hurt. And I think that if you're in a long-term relationship with someone, you should be able to say, no, I don't want this right now. And if not, then this is a really huge problem that's sort of divorced from these issues. And that.
I think that's an important point. I also think, like, it's hard to say if the survivor is having flashbacks or something, but she or he can't verbalize that.
But if someone's a survivor in a long-term relationship, the other person should be aware of this, and different boundaries can be set up based on that relationship.
But you're assuming that the other person knows.
In a long-term relationship in which there's this level of trust where verbal consent is being let down, if the person can just say that they're not okay with having sex without verbal consent being made.
Yeah, I mean, that was the thing I was going to put up, is that, like, I think verbal consent, two parties can agree. Like, maybe given the system that verbal consent is the norm, two parties can then agree that from then on they don't require that of each other. But maybe what we're talking about is just setting up the norm of verbal consent being, you know, given a situation that verbal consent is required, and then two parties can agree that they don't require that of each other anymore. But that would be a verbal consent to not verbally consent.
Yes,
let's go. No problem. Sounds like you're a light-hearted one. Good question. When is it appropriate to tell the person you're interested in that you have an STD? Not light, but a good question. When is it appropriate to tell the person you're interested in that you have an STD? Or STI, I believe they call them that.
I mean, I think it's required before physical intimacy. I would say that it's appropriate as soon as you're able to talk about the possibility of you two being sexually intimate. So anywhere between there, I think it's appropriate.
I wouldn't say it's first date material, though.
If you're talking with somebody about...
Unless you're having sex on the first date, very good point.
Yeah, if you're talking with somebody on the first date about being sexually intimate with them, I think that it's appropriate for them.
I think it's more of an issue with people that are having sex very soon after meeting, you know, wait a couple dates, then you might be at a level of being more comfortable to tell them, but I think it's we need to discuss it more in terms of litter.
I don't think it's ever inappropriate to tell
the singer.
I mean,
I guess I didn't.
Maybe ill-advised to say hello. I have an STD.
I didn't mean to say that it was ever inappropriate.
No, I didn't say that you were. Brain going with that.
No, I think it is inappropriate, which is why I said after it's your, you know, after it's you feel comfortable talking with them about being physically intimate, because I think there's an implication of that. If you're on a first date with someone and you tell them you have an STD, I think that also, like, you should be comfortable enough for them to talk about wanting to be physically intimate with them. Does that make sense?
Because otherwise it's almost a come-on.
Exactly, it has that implication. Well, not a come-on. I mean,
it's like when we have sex, you should know that.
Yeah.
And if it's your first date with someone, you're like, when we have sex.
Exactly.
Yeah. That'd be some come on, eh? I've got herpes.
But I've also got condoms.
Alright.
Yes.
I think it's also important to, like, treat every partner that you don't know really well, or, like, be conscious of the fact that they, like, could have an STI. Like, and, like, if you go from there and think about that in terms of, like, making every sexual act, like, a safe one.
I think that really, like, once you pass the point where there's some minuscule chance of cross-contamination, you fucked up, and that's really bad. But anywhere before that, it's sort of up to you personally. It may just be ill-advised to spring this on someone, like, right before you have sex, because that's just uncomfortable for everyone. I think that once you get up to the moral things, it's just that there's some chance of cross-contamination.
That was my question, because I know someone that's going through it, and I guess maybe I should explain it better because I don't like how I worded it.
Okay.
Obviously, if you're about to have sex with somebody, you should tell them. I mean, that kind of goes without saying, you know. But I specifically meant, when does it get to when you have STIs that are contracted other ways, not just by actually just having intercourse, but that, you know, that you can get from, you know, oral sex or, like, just fingering or them even, like, touching you down there when, like, with the case of herpes, if someone has a breakout and they touch you and, you know, I mean, and then they put it up to their mouth or whatever. I mean, like, with issues like that where it's not that clear cut, of course, before you have actual intercourse, you should tell them. But when it's, like, you just meet somebody at a party and you go home and you start making out, I mean, for the comfort level of the person that has the STI, when is it okay for them not to tell the person that they have it?
That's an odd one with herpes, because oral herpes, it's 4 out of 5 people, 80% of people estimated don't know they have it.
Yeah,
it's basically, it's such a huge portion of the population that, like,
actual herpes, vaginal herpes, a lot.
That's the same
population, that don't know that they have it.
Right. No, absolutely. I think that, like, the problem is, since it's sort of the same thing,
mm-hmm.
like, I think since so many people have cold sores, it's sort of an interesting thing. Like, should you haven't had a cold sore in a year, do you tell someone that you're making out with?
Yeah, or just the fact that, like, you're making out with this person, and you think that maybe they might go down to touch you there, but you're not really planning on them to, but if they happen to, should you suck it up and tell this person this really intimate thing about yourself on the off chance they might go and explore that area? I mean,
well, gee, if they had to ask for it, there wouldn't be a problem. Sorry,
natural.
Personally, I would want that piece of information before the first kiss. And if it came at that point, I would be not only very thankful that it was given to me before any intimacy occurred, but I would be much more willing to go through safe sexual practices with that person than, let's say, I was making out with them, the pants were off, and I was going for it, and they're like, oh, by the way, I would be out that door so frigging fast because you waited till the last minute. But if it was before the last kiss, before the first, by the way, I have this, because of that, we need to take precautions, but I, in the long term, if that ever happens, but I, you know, am knowledgeable about this situation, and I know what to do to keep you safe. I would feel
very protected, very cared for, and much more likely to partake in those sexual activities in a safe manner, if at all, than if they just sprung it on me. That's personal.
I think part of the problem with this is that there's so little education about this topic that people's immediate reaction when they hear something is to run away. And that would make intimacy extremely difficult if you have an STD. I don't know that, I mean, I certainly wouldn't say that people shouldn't inform their sexual partners. It gets really complicated. I mean, I think that's the most important thing is that, like, how do you bring it up? How do you address it? How do you talk about it openly without driving someone away immediately? Because people just, they don't know. They don't know the information. They don't understand how it's transmitted a lot of the time. They don't understand the difference between different diseases. I mean, how do you
address
that? And
schools teach people that they're a lot worse than they are.
Mm-hmm. Well, not only that, they don't spend enough time on them for you to understand the differences between them. I mean, the difference between herpes and AIDS is earth-shattering, you know? Like, but people hear STD and close off immediately. So how do you address that?
Because they're all, because no matter what, like the degree of severity of an STI or STD, whatever, they're all grouped under STIs.
And really, if you look at the long-term effects of any of them, if it's not HPV or AIDS, for 99% of the population, it really won't have a long-term effect. I mean, herpes, they can be reduced with medicine, and then later on, the outbreaks get less and less frequent. Genital warts generally don't come back after tumor removals. Like, it's, you know,
genital
it's
warts are HPV, though.
Well,
yeah.
That's what I'm saying, but, like, in some situations, you don't have to worry about...
Well...
If there are two men together, you don't have to worry about cervical cancer.
Well, like, chlamydia and, you know, syphilis and whatever, they can be treated and killed very easily, but if they're not, they will have very serious long-term.
Well, yes, no, absolutely.
Some things can really
But
affect,
if people are
like,
better educated about that,
kind of
to
well, not if they're treated soon.
But,
I was going to say, my response to your question earlier about, like, about, you know, like, if you're in a situation where the things might be possible. I think if you want to, I think it's all up to the person, but given that situation, I think the person needs to be prepared that if the person, you know, using too many pronouns, but, you know, like, let's say somebody's going to go down, you know, a girl or whatever, or I think the if the girl has waited that long, she needs to be prepared, for instance, in that situation, to, if it starts to happen, to say it at that point. I mean, like, I think... And if she's all right doing that, then she could wait all the way up to the end. I think that's probably not the smartest thing because that's not the best situation to spring that on somebody. But
yeah. I guess a better way, not that this needs to be answered any further, but almost as a closing, if people want to answer it, they can. I guess a better way of asking the question I'm asking is when is it, I mean, is it ever okay for a person to want to keep that personal, if in any kind of situation, like if they're just going on a first date with somebody and they really don't know how it's going to go, do they have this responsibility to tell this person just in the off chance that it does when they kiss them at the end of the night? I mean, that's what I'm saying. Like, is there a time when it's okay not to tell somebody and to just keep it to yourself? And is it okay to, like, you know, wait and see how something goes? Or do you have to put yourself out on the table just because there is that chance that it could go that way and you don't want to be left to the last minute?
I think it's just the moral obligation is when the other person's in danger, and anything else mm-hmm. is your own personal decision based on how you think it will affect the relationship you're in.
Mm-hmm. And it depends on the person you're with.
Yeah.
Yep.
Next question.
Next.
Really?
Yeah.
There's
all sorts of
things. Does anyone know what time it is?
4:30.
4:30?
Oh yeah.
Half an hour.
Make them good. Be picky.
Oh, be picky?
Yeah.
Alright, I'll pick up.
Do some good sex.
Oh, I'll be picky.
You'll get to some happy ones.
Let's do a life hard.
Yeah, we'll have deeper moral dilemmas.
Alright, I'll just pull these out and I'll blank. Fill in your own question and answer session.
Let's see that.
Okay, here we go. I think this is a very interesting question. But I'm going to turn the sheet out, the color of the paper.
No, don't ask that one. Another question. Oh, no,
now you have to ask it.
I don't even know
if
you can answer this, but I'm going to try it.
Now you have.
How healthy is feces? ... Exactly. Valid question. Anybody? I have no idea.
I don't think it's healthy at all. It's full of very dangerous bacteria. You could get E. coli.
This is why your body excretes it.
Yeah, well, I mean, what exactly are they asking? How healthy is it to eat? How healthy is it to smear all over your body? How healthy is it to, like, have walls? Like, what are they talking about?
I think most everyone here has agreed that this is an unhealthy bodily substance that is better left flushed down the toilet.
I'm just really curious
as to what this person was getting at.
In dealing with anal sex, it's not something to be terrified of.
You
know, if you're careful, if you use protection, if you use enough lube, it's not going to be a big deal. You just keep yourself clean. I mean, that's the fundamental issue. I think that's a problem, the whole anal sex issue. Is that there's so much fear revolving around that. It's not really necessary.
That's a very good point. What are ways to meet people while sober?
Yeah.
That's a good
question. Very good question.
I don't know.
I've just given up meeting people sober, so I'm going to be honest.
I met the person I'm pursuing by dying in Northampton.
I met the person.
Activism is great
that
for me.
I kind of date that lives in Kentucky at an anarchist space in Chicago, so yeah. Thumbs up to anarchism.
Well, I mean, yeah, the.
Activism.
The, like.
Hobbies.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, like, the after-school special answer is, like, go and join groups and, like, do things and meet people that are interested in what you're in, or, like, go to a bookstore and see if they're looking at a book that you like and go up to them. But, I mean, everything comes down to you have to work on you and your confidence and your ability. You can meet anybody anywhere. There is no place specifically to meet people. You meet people everywhere. It all just comes down to you and your ability to make those meetings happen. I mean, and that's kind of what's behind. That's just right. That's what kind of I think is behind the question. It's more, how do you learn to get more comfortable with yourself in order to meet people?
So you can approach people.
So you can approach people without having to be under the influence, and then you know, your inhibitions.
Well, I think there's two steps too. There's meeting people and being interested in them, and meet you know, and then there's take you know. I think people also use alcohol to get to the next step, to like make something happen.
Yeah.
I mean, that's another question. Like how, you know, we've talked a lot about asking and verbal consent, but what sort of situations are there other than alcohol to facilitate?
Well, I think it comes back to your answer.
Plenty of other answers.
Alcohol is not the only answer.
Right.
Well, I think the ease of alcohol is like to have like casual sex and then you know kind of be done with it. Like I don't think and like I know I don't go to Prescott parties to meet my like partner. You know.
Yeah.
I don't know about how most people feel about that, but.
Yeah, and like, but alcohol also gives you the confidence that you don't have when you're sober to, you know, try to make out with everybody, which is what I tend to do.
It's true. I definitely use alcohol to loosen myself up just enough to even say, hey, you know what, I like you.
Yeah.
Or you can always use it as an excuse. I mean, it's so easy to be like, yeah, I like you when you're drunk, and then if they don't say the same back, they're like, oh, I'm drunk, I don't know what I'm saying, come on.
You can always forget it the morning
yeah,
after.
Yeah, forget it the next day, but... Maybe that's the first step to building confidence, is to manifest that
drunk.
Feeling of the diminishing of your inhibitions by almost
your
acting like you're able to accept you're not. But yeah, I think it does go down to my point, though, still. I mean, it's all about your idea of yourself working on yourself and being able to go up to a person and being okay with them saying no or being okay with them not, you know, responding back.
you know, and still walking away, like, scotch-free, being like, yeah, it's all right. I just thought they looked cool, but whatever. Let's move on, you know?
Yeah, that used to be a problem I really had with I got way too invested in something. Like, I let it go too long. I think about the person too much. And then you get to it, and if it doesn't work out, you're torpedoed.
Yeah.
That's why...
The end of the world.
Yes.
Yeah.
The sky has fallen, and...
Yeah.
I also think that, like, meeting people isn't necessarily the most... for me, at least, I tend to date people I'm already friends with.
Yeah.
And I kind of like that dynamic, and it's just the harder thing is the meeting people, it's the figuring out how to...
Well, again, that could be another step involved in the process, is your mentality. I think that has a lot to do with everything about dating, is your mentality going into it. If you have this mentality, like, I'm cool, whatever, they look like a cool person, and that's it, rather than, oh my God, they're so hot, oh my God, I would really like to get in bed with them, oh my God, or like something like that. If you just go into it with this mentality, like, whatever, you know, then...
Isn't it okay to be that invested, though?
Like, yeah, it is.
Definitely,
but I'm just saying, if you have a problem with going up to people,
right,
a good technique might be to just kind of take that step back and try to envision that it's more just a meeting of a friend, not a meeting of a potential.
I think it's also okay to be that invested if you're lacking this person is so hot, hotter than me, if they will date me, that makes me as hot as them, therefore I'm cool and I'm sexy.
What?
Validation. If you're that invested because you don't need validation, if you're doing it because you're really invested and not because you're invested in validating yourself, that's fine. I think it comes back to that a lot too. People go for people who they feel are just a little out of their league because then they can pop up into a higher league.
But I think that, I mean, people... That, I think it's BS to talk about, like, they're out of my league, I can't go for them. Because, like, I don't know, I think there are certain people who, you know, are really, I can't think of a good word, but think too much of themselves, and they're not out of your league, they're just assholes. And then, you know, like... I think we should all look at each other as being on the same playing field, and maybe there's somebody that I think is, like, really hot, but just because maybe they have more of a, like, cultural ideal of being hot doesn't mean that they can't find me hot because, you know, I'm not really thin, so, or something like that, or something. I'm just saying as a superficial thing that,
yeah. Well, I completely agree with that, and I think that would make a great, great bumper sticker. They're not out of your league. They're just assholes.
Like, anybody that really believes, like, you're below them, and, like, how could you even imagine hitting on me because you're so ugly? You don't want to date somebody like that.
I think that a lot of people, I want to say that. With me, in my experience, if I think somebody's out of my league, it's not based on how they're acting. It's based on my idea of where I am.
Mm-hmm.
And not because they're acting cocky and like looking like they're the shit, but because I think that they're the shit.
But yeah, but then,
you know,
that's getting
so
into
that's
like
that's
building your own
confidence. Exactly. But I'm just saying that there, that is also comes into play with the whole league issue.
Yeah.
Just open these up and figure we'll go in some sort of order.
Mm-hmm.
First question, which I think is very important, I would like to get to it really fast. Two actually. One, how at risk am I at contracting an STD by having unprotected oral sex? Not getting into STD by STD situation, let's say in general.
I think you have to get into STD by STD discussion because some of them you're really...
High risk,
maybe
not.
Yeah, herpes are high risk.
Right, because it's the same virus here as it is here.
But
well, actually, they're different viruses, but they...
No, simplex 1 and 2 are completely cross-compatible, and they have the same symptoms, so you might as well just call them the same thing. It's effectively.
Yeah, but I mean, you can't... But no matter what, if you don't have a breakout down there, like, you have
7 days
you
before a breakout, there can be shedding of skin, so you can't actually tell
that way. Yeah, but I mean, there's risk, but I mean, there's still, like, the chance. It does go by the day, and there's still a chance that you won't.
Mm-hmm.
I mean...
But things like AIDS, that you're pretty low risk, unless you have, like... I think there was one case, one time, where, like, somebody had bleeding gums, and that.
If you're cutting
you
your knife or your throat.
Yeah, if you're,
right. Well,
yeah,
the thing is
cut,
that
you they have a cut.
The way that you get HIV, at least vaginally and anally, is not because of cuts in your body. It's because of the way something about like the nerves and the skin, and it's like porous and it can kind of just like absorb it, which I know sounds really weird. But so, and I think that I've heard that they believe that you may, your throat, they're not completely sure, it may be similar tissue, I guess, to vaginal and anal, so there is a certain level of risk there.
But at the same time, the fundamental difference is the existence of an acidic environment, which can very quickly kill the HIV virus. So that's also a factor that's not so much present.
Does anyone have statistics on just general? I had a laptop.
Left my statistics folder at home. Sorry.
I would definitely say,
I think the thing is,
HIV, you want to use protection.
As, yeah, I mean, oral sex is generally a pretty low risk activity, but you definitely
can.
There's
still a risk.
There's still a risk, and you definitely, I mean, if you are having oral sex with somebody you know has an STD, as far as I know, I don't know if you can get, like, chlamydia or syphilis or anything like that through oral sex. I would imagine it's much, even more low risk. But anyway, I mean...
What if the two you can? I don't remember which.
Okay, but, you know, if you're having oral sex with somebody you know has an STD, you should probably use protection.
Definitely.
You know.
Okay. I was trying to say that.
Unless you're an idiot.
if you're having oral sex with someone you don't know very well, you should be using protection. And I know that's hard because most men I know are like, oh man, that, oh, what did we say before? It ruins the moment. It doesn't feel as good, right? Fuck you. Personal bit.
That goes back to the whole autoerotic asphyxiation thing, which is like, doesn't feel, why are we comparing when it still feels amazing?
Good point. Just watch my mother download this and hear me talking about it. Next question. What's the most reliable condom on the market?
Reliable?
It's not direct.
Durex has always worked for me.
Oh, sorry,
every single time.
Durex?
Oh, okay.
They're not
and
so
those?
Because of what?
Because they like break so often.
I disagree. Trojans have broken twice as much as many times as Durex for me.
Well, that's personal opinion.
That's
she's stating.
I'm stating a fact.
Maybe you say works and working those babies correctly.
but yeah, that's been like stated in a number of like. Reputable sources.
And you shouldn't use lambskin condoms. Those are also not reliable because they don't protect against STIs.
They're not vegan, are they?
No, they're not.
And it's not actually, because I think Durex is one of the few condoms that Hampshire provides.
Mm-hmm.
Someone should let them know about that, maybe?
Mm.
I will bring that up.
So I don't really know. I mean, I... Personally, Trojan has worked for me, and as far as I know from talking to other people, they've been happy with Trojan, but it's pretty much like the best, I think that if you have never heard the brand name of a condom, you probably shouldn't use it, you know, like if it's this obscure, like... just out of the dark, random condom that you, like the one that they usually have in the house offices at Hampshire College, you might want to stay away from those.
That said also though, condoms in this country are like rigorously tested and have to meet certain standards, so, you know.
Yeah.
Rigorously tested?
They actually, I think...
How do I sign up for that one?
I think they have machines that do it.
Well...
I've heard of people who have programs, yeah.
Yeah.
And they get free condoms and some cash to write up reviews.
Yeah.
That's high.
Well, as long as we're talking about the condoms that are provided in Hampshire, what do people want so that we can go tell Karen Polly to get them?
Huh. Sounds like Trojans.
I think, yeah, Trojans.
Yeah, I hear it.
Jet black ones.
Those are freaky looking.
Tuxedos?
Tuxedos are freaky looking.
Not very many.
One
just little faces on the end.
Flavor?
Like the rabbit.
Yeah.
That's like scary.
Yeah.
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 What were you saying? I think that's one we already don't we have that already?
Yeah,
we
have some of them, though. It seems like, well, I know that those are more expensive brands, so you don't see them as often in the big bowls of condom.
And one thing I would say, just as being an intern and hearing people complain in the house office, there seems to be an equal number of lubricated and non-lubricated butt, and they both have specific purposes and are important. But it seems to me that I worry that when we run out of lubricated, now we have our unlubricated, people are just too lazy to go out and lubricate the fuck with themselves. I did it again. And that worries me. That worries me because people come in and they're like, "Oh, you just got non-lubricated," and then leave, and I see them leaving and going and having unprotected sex, and that scares me. So, what?
You see them?
No. I see them in my head. I'm paranoid.
All the interns have cameras. I think it'd be good if the school provided more double dams because there's not very many in there.
Are there different brands of double dams?
I don't really know. I mean, there are.
That's definitely true. On the other hand, like, the vast majority of dental dams that get used on this campus, maybe I can say that. I know that there's a concern that a lot of dental dams just get wasted and used as, like, dental dam. You know, like, they get used as, like, toys as opposed to.
Well, but.
So, and they're really expensive compared to condoms. So we probably need a way to, like, get. You know, some sort of education.
Sign up in every hall and in every mod that tells you how to turn a condom into a dental dam?
Oh,
mm-hmm.
That's good. Okay, while we're on this topic, what are the dangers, if any, of a guy using his spit to lubricate? Is that even...
Spit's good at lubricating.
It is?
Yeah. From what I, like...
It's pretty... dirty, though, isn't it? The human mouth is pretty bacteria-ridden. Then you get oral sex.
Yeah, you're giving oral sex and making out.
It's a good point.
It's not oil-based.
Well, that was easily answered. This is not my question, but I might as well ask it, because I have no idea what the hell they're talking about. I don't even know how to pronounce it. What is the... Frenulum?
Frenulum?
Thank you! Anybody? I have no idea.
Isn't it like a special spot on the penis where a lot of like their tendons meet?
It is, isn't it? It's a little spot right under the head.
Yep.
Do you need to draw a picture?
Like the ridge? Underneath the head?
Underneath the head. Underneath the helmet.
A very neglected spot, by the way.
Yes.
Let's just say two guys are more thorough.
Yeah.
Okay. Next question. I'm teasing. Mostly. I'm trying to figure what should be next. There's a question here just as smoking after sex, .. during. I think smoking during sex is more dangerous.
Oh, that's good.
Anybody else find that this is... Smoking after sex or during?
Or think about the stories you can tell your grandchildren.
Huh?
This scar right here.
Yeah, that was our old house.
All right. I think that is itself. Is it possible to be sexual with a friend without it... Oh, I'm just going to say it. Fucking with the friendship. Does friend with benefits exist?
Depends who you are.
I think that depends on your aims, like what you each want.
And it depends on... it does exist, I think, as long as you're very upfront about it from the get-go. As long as you can have an open dialogue with this person and say... and set like boundaries and actually discuss it. If that's what you're looking for, that's where it lies. And both people know that that's what it's about, then it can be possible. There's always that chance that you're going to fall for somebody because you're constantly being intimate with them. But, I mean, that depends on you as a person and your limits in that kind of arena. But I think where the problem comes up is when people just kind of start being friends with benefits without actually talking about being friends with benefits.
Mm-hmm.
And amen, you know? And then, so one person's thinking,
cool, I get to call up this person and ask whenever I want. Sweet, you know, no strings attached. And then the other person's like, oh, God, I like them so much. It's so great. I'm having sex. And they really like me because they hold me afterwards and we're having this relationship or whatever. And it just may not be the case. So, as long as you...
I think it's also important not to live in a mod together when you're doing that.
More Hall.
If Hall booty is bad booty, mod booty is worse booty. I was told when I started it.
I'm definitely old-fashioned and I even, you know, going against own recent personal experiences, feel that it's very hard to separate the two. It separate love and physical intimacy, personally. It can happen on rare occasion, but I've found personally that when it does, friendship is also not an option, because if you're going to be someone's friend, I personally think if you're going to be someone's friend, you're going to screw around with them. Why not put the two together? It's much easier to screw around with someone who, as a person, you find rather annoying.
What about just kind of being in a situation with a person where, like, you make out from time to time, but you don't really have sex, but you make out from time to time, and you just like having them as a cuddle buddy? Is that possible? Is that more possible than actually having sex with somebody?
It almost seems less possible.
Kind of less possible?
Because just like making out, you're adding a lot of limits into sort of a certain degree of intimacy in that, I feel like. I mean, if you're just in it for sex, there's that's your reason for doing this. And the reason you're staying friends is you don't want to be in a relationship with this person. But if you're sharing the sort of intimate kissing, making out, cuddling thing, I feel like there's almost more likelihood of that growing into a stronger connection.
I think it depends, like, how often you're talking about it. It sounds really weird, but I feel like
if you're doing it every night, then that's a little bit different than,
right.
You know, every once in a while, I'm feeling shitty today. Will you come over and cuddle with me and spend the night and just so I can have someone lying next to me? And that's a little bit different.
Wait, there's a big difference between, for me at least, cuddling and snuggling and, like, spending the night with someone. What?
I said you're my cuddle buddy.
It's true. I'm Jamie's cuddle buddy. We don't make out.
Definitely.
Like, I don't know, for me, I'm with you in that, like, make out with someone, I think, has a lot of potential. I mean, I think it's all personal, but, like, for me, like, make out with somebody has a lot of, I don't know, cuddling and making out is different. That's all I was going to say.
Oh, yeah.
I
agree.
I think, once again, it just depends on what you're looking for. You know, like, if you're not looking for a relationship and the person you're with is not looking for a relationship, then cuddling together is just that. You know what I mean? All about
communication.
Communication. Mm-hmm. It's all about
communication.
Communication and confidence.
Huh? Communication and confidence. I think communication and confidence. How can lack of sobriety on one or both of one or both parties be addressed besides just not doing it? I think what this question is saying is how can, if two people are going to get it on and one or both people are not sober, how do you go about navigating that situation without just avoiding the situation?
You mean in terms of consent? Like how?
I'm guessing that's what this question is about.
Or making sure that you're not feeling like you're taking advantage of the other person, even if they are saying yes. I mean, they're not sober, so.
Well, legally,
you can't give consent if you're drunk. If you are involved with someone and one or both of you are drunk, consent cannot be given.
But that's kind of sticky, because if there are two drunk people and they have sex and neither one can legally give consent. I've heard of a guy getting kicked out of college, and I believe legal charges were brought because his girlfriend woke up, discovered that she'd had sex, assumed that she hadn't given consent. He also was completely drunk at the time, didn't remember it. And he got kicked out and she was fine. And they didn't even know the entire situation.
Wait, do you want to rephrase the she was fine part? Because she felt like she was
fine. She didn't get kicked legally.
I mean legally. But she also was completely unaware if she'd been raped, violated, or whatever, or if she had at the time given consent while on equal mental footing with him.
Okay.
him that if she were prosecuted, then.
But she didn't remember what happened at all. That you can't really make that assumption. She woke up. She didn't remember a damn thing that had happened.
Well,
and admitted to that.
Did he remember anything?
No.
He didn't remember.
He claimed that he did not believe that. She claimed that that they would consensual sex. I think. This was a while ago that I heard this.
It seems to me this is a situation where both people are drunk, both people are at risk for consequences the morning after.
Yeah.
Right. No. Absolutely. But I'm saying that it's also always sort of a sticky situation where you say, well, so-and-so can't give consent. But in a situation where nobody can give consent, you're in a strange limbo.
Which is why you shouldn't get yourself into these situations.
But the other question is, how drunk do people have to get before they can't give consent? Is that one drink? Or is that enough drinks that they can't walk in a straight line? I mean, like, at what point do you... I mean, I know that becomes a huge issue legally.
And stages of intimacy also, I think, take account there. I mean, if you've been going out with someone for 2 years and you've had sex 3 times a week and you're drunk and you feel like having sex.
Well, that also brings up the question of, can you give consent before you get drunk? You know, I think that's an interesting question. Because, I mean, like...
Can you say, I'm going to get drunk, and while I'm drunk, it's okay if we have sex? Is that what you mean?
Yeah, I mean, like, I don't know.
I think that would be...
But then that's right, because if your consent changes,
yes,
yeah.
Exactly.
Then you're not.
That's what I think of it.
But if it doesn't change,
sure.
But yeah, I think it. I mean, as many of these questions come down to, I think it comes down to how well you know the person. If you're talking about a party situation where you just meet somebody and one of you's more drunk than the other, or one's drunk and one's completely sober, or whatever, then it probably wouldn't be a good idea, if you're the sober one, to act on that, because you don't know this person very well, and you don't know if they're just going to wake up and assume that this happened and just fill in the blanks themselves and feel violated and, you know, whatever, or if they're going to be fine with it. But if you're already involved with a person, you know, I think that, again, you still don't have a 100% guarantee on how they're going to respond, but I mean, I think that you have a little bit more elbow room to go for it if you're already involved with this person, and then you go to a party and then they get a little tipsy and then they feel a little frisky, you know, and you be able to go home and make love to your boyfriend or girlfriend, you know. So it kind of comes down again to the how well you know the person.
Okay. I think the most interesting question you brought up in that is the consent before inebriation. It's very interesting. I'll leave it with that. Two more questions. If someone says no, 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 and their partner badgers them into yes, what is that? How can pressure be accounted for?
That is not consent.
Yeah.
That's right.
All it takes is one no. You know, and no matter, I think, how quick a person will change to yes. As long as that no is first said, then that's it. That's where it is.
As long as that no is ever said, first, second, or last. You know?
But how long is it hard? What happens if somebody says, no, I'm just going to push this because it seems... Like, what happens if somebody says no and they leave and they come back and say, actually, yes. You know, what about
pressured that? In between that time to say yes.
How do you define that question?
Can you really change your mind, though? Like, what if you really did change your mind?
I think if there's any doubt in the other partner's mind that their answer is still no, say, okay, like, I hear that you're saying yes, not right now. Go think about this.
Yeah. So in that situation, the responsibility is falling on the partner who asked, not the partner who's answering?
Well, I guess Lethan's also asking, well, what if you think that they did take the time to think about it? Should you go for it? Knowing that even some time before, they weren't into it. You know, like, let's say you meet somebody, you're having a date, and then you're finishing up the date, things are kind of getting heavy, they say no, and that's like at 9 o'clock. And then in the wee hours of the morning, you get a light tapping on your door, and they're like, you know, I really want you. Should you do it?
I think the question is, I really want you because I really want you, or I really want you because I want to keep you around?
Then,
question to be answering. As the president can approach early in the morning.
I think there is some level of responsibility to being able to trust your partner to tell you what they want to do. And I think if someone says, I don't have sex right now, and you say, are you sure? They say, well, on second thought, maybe. Or, are you sure I really feel like it right now? That's, I don't think that that's a horrible thing to do, and you give them input on what you're, where you're coming from. And they can respond to that and change their mind. And you, if you feel like the person you're with is incapable of considering a situation with your input and not bowing to you completely out of some sort of a being in this this childlike position where you're able to exert this much command over them, then this is another issue. There's a larger issue in place here. I personally wouldn't be with someone who I didn't feel could give me an honest answer on something like that, but from where they were really coming from. I wouldn't deal with that level of ambiguity if I didn't think someone could tell me what they were thinking. And that my input, like, I feel like someone says they don't really feel like it right now, I sort of feel like it. If they can't take that into account without letting it override their own feelings, then I think it's a huge problem. I've had a girlfriend say, I don't really feel like this right now, and had them say, oh, come on, I really want to. And I'm like, okay. I don't really have a problem with bowing a little bit to my partner. And I think that that should be able to work both ways without huge amounts of fear about, oh, no, what if they're just saying this because, what if? And I think that's a separate relationship issue.
Yeah, I never thought I'd be the one to say this, but I think people should have to take more responsibility for their own actions than we're accounting for. Like, a person who comes back and says yes, has said yes. I mean, that was their choice, that was their decision to make that statement. And that's something that, I feel like we're putting so much responsibility on the partner. And I don't think that that's a reasonable scenario. I mean, I think it is your responsibility to make decisions for yourself. And if you make mistakes, you learn from them. I mean, that's a shitty situation, but it's kind of how it is, you know? I really don't think that the partner has.
Can I clarify?
Yeah.
When you said when the partner comes back, do you mean like the partner has physically left?
Yeah, or the situation we had said before.
Right.
Okay.
I mean, but even if it's a situation in which if somebody's pressuring me to do something, and I said no, it's my decision to say no or to say, you know, maybe this would be okay. And yes, there's that power dynamic, but it's my responsibility to protect myself and do what I choose to do.
Well,
I mean, there's so many peer pressure situations. Like,
well, I think it's hard because I think that is something that occurs in a lot of relationship violence situations and in a lot of other like dynamics in a relationship that may not be entirely comfortable for one partner.
Yeah, I mean, like, at what point do you consider it, no, yes? Is that okay? No, and then not no more no's? Is that okay? I mean, like, there's a lot of really kind of sketchy situations where the person has stopped saying no, but that doesn't necessarily, I don't know.
I don't
feel comfortable just saying, like, it's completely in.
We're not making wide sweeping statements. We're saying that there are situations in which people need to be able to behave with each other as equals.
But if you're with somebody, if you say yes, you say yes, though. Like, there's a huge difference between saying no, and then stop saying no, and saying a definitive yes.
Well, but if you're with somebody, and they keep, come on, baby, I just want to have sex, and you say no, and they keep, come on, and you keep saying no, and they keep asking you, and eventually say, okay, fine. That is not, I don't think, personally, like, yes, in a sense, you're consenting. But if somebody's been badgering you, for a long time, I know that my best friend lost her virginity when we were teenagers because her boyfriend was constantly asking her to have sex with him. And I mean, I don't think that she didn't consider him, he didn't rape her, but she didn't really want to do it. And I don't think that's okay.
Well, I have another question to propose that might raise some hell. It's not at all like me saying an opinion, but does tone of the no ever matter? Okay, like is there, I mean, because that kind of comes with it, that a no is a no, whatever, and that, you know, that brings up that kind of issue of if a girl is saying, like, the flirty no, and then something does happen, and then she calls rape, that a lot of people will be like, well, she said just the flirty no, whatever. But, I mean, is there ever really a situation where the way in which they say no could be construed as a signal for them to really keep going, and then after the fact...
Well, I think there's a difference between, no, I don't have time to have sex because I'm going to be late to class, and then changing your mind about being like, okay, I'll be late to class. This is really violating my boundaries.
Or like, no, I don't feel sexual right now. Like, you know, or like, and then like they get turned on, and then like they do. Well, you know, I mean, I don't know that that's been the situation I've been in. Like, we're like, and it wasn't a battering situation. It wasn't like, come on, yes. It was like, partner wasn't feeling sexual, and then they just were feeling sexual. You know, I mean, and it goes back to like what, you know, I think what kind of no it is.
Yeah, well, that's more about the context of the no. I'm strictly just talking about if a girl is like, no, come on, no, as opposed to no, does that matter? Does the fact that the first no is more like, oh, come on.
I think
more than it's like, no, I don't want to.
I think that maybe it could matter in a relationship where that has already been established, that is like a dynamic that goes on. Mm-hmm. You know, if there's a dynamic of like, you know, in terms of like, if a man and a woman or you know, any couple enjoys being like, I don't want this to sound really weird, but like, you know, hit or something during sex, that doesn't mean they want to have an abusive relationship. Like, it could just be part of the act. I think maybe if it's an already established thing, and which is why a lot of people, you know, in terms of relationships like that, have like safe words that, you know, no does not mean no, but like banana means no. So,
well, yeah.
It just sounds really silly, but.
Also, like, a lot of times women are forced to like couch their language and their opinions in like a general like flirty no. You know, like I think
that's,
it's so much like or as a woman, like people listen to you more if you're like, well, what I actually think is that war is wrong because, you know, if you're actually like, war is wrong, like fuck you, you know? Like I think that it's hard to like,
and not everybody feels comfortable saying no. And sometimes they soften that by saying no, you know.
Yeah,
and like so, like defense mechanisms can be laughing. Like, when I get nervous, I laugh.
Yeah.
Like, are you gonna say that I didn't say no because I was laughing while I said it?
Okay. I think maybe that can come back to. Because I think there is a valid flirty no does exist. I know it exists because I use it.
You tease.
Yeah, basically. But the question is, when is it nervousness and when is it, you know, is the batting away your way of saying, no, maybe try a little harder, or I am not feeling comfortable enough to say this in a firm, strong tone.
And, like, if it's a situation where, let's say, it's a young couple or something, and the report of the rape is actually filed by an outsider, like a parent, and the no is brought up, but the girl said in a specific way, but all the court will hear is that she said no, and then this other kid gets prosecuted. Like, where does that come into play? I mean, because an outsider will just hear the no and just automatically assume, oh, they said no, it must mean that they really didn't want to. Not take into account that it could mean other things.
That's why you should have sex where your parents can hear you.
I think that would take an admission of the okay, yeah, it was a playful no on the part of the the minor or the child or whoever's involved, which could be just as hard to do. Especially say it is in front of your parents or a court of law. It's probably. I'm saying in this specific example where the flirty no was used in all its flirty glory, that it might be just as hard to say, yeah, okay, so I was playing, I was teasing. It might almost be easier in front of your parents or adults in a court of law or a policeman to say, yeah, okay, so I just said no.
That's not usually an easy thing to say, though, in court of law.
What? Oh, no, just throw another situation there. Just, you know, I was saying, I think it's easy.
Yeah.
She
was about to ask if charges like that can be brought up by another person, and I said yes,
it can be. Do you use those a lot with statutory rape laws?
Pretty much.
I've heard of a couple cases of parents of gay guys claiming it was statutory rape because one person was like a couple of months past the law and they filed rape charges on behalf of their kid because they were homophobes.
Yeah.
Well, that's the nature of statutory rape.
Well, yeah.
The parents file it. Yeah. It's a crime against the parents'
family property or whatever.
Oh my God, really?
Yeah. Are we doing another question?
It's a whole new can of worms. I only got one more question.
Is it a fun one?
Yes, but before we get to it, I would just like to say, if you're walking around campus, you see a door propped open to a residential area, please unprop it. Please sleep with your doors locked. Just safety precautions, please. Go through these. As stupid as they sound, carry your keys. It's a hazard that could save not only you but other people.
I have a question, which I don't know if you would know the answer or any of the CAs, as someone more involved in the administration. With what's going on, does the school have any plans to have like a scan card system or anything?
They've been working on a scan card system separate from this issue for a while. Okay. I think it's a purely money issue. It's really expensive.
Yeah.
I haven't heard any new talk about it. But tomorrow it's 7:30 in the morning. We're flooding Greg Prince's here with talk about this. So everybody.
Do you have to pay for breakfast if you want to come for
Greg Prince's
breakfast?
No.
Okay.
In
fact, many people don't go and just don't talk to Greg Prince and eat for free. You're really frugal people.
And then also Tuesday night, CAs are having a speaking session.
I may just be in a black hole in Hampshire, but what exactly are you guys talking about what's been going on?
Huh, it's important.
Someone
who knows more what they can talk about, please feel this.
Yeah,
question.
I think that's another point, too, though, is that they have not made enough people aware. I did not hear until a week later.
It's
a
sticky situation about how to make people aware.
Put posters
like
everywhere.
Without violating people's privacy. But yeah, I have no clue. So please enlighten me.
Basically, the simple thing is that two weekends in a row there have been incidences with intruders. Violating people's spaces to different degrees. That's a very vague answer to your question. Intruders come in
Hampshire.
And
sexual
easy
access.
What? To various degrees.
Okay.
This is we
haven't closed it
because it's vague.
Yeah.
I mean,
the answer
is
vague.
And also, if you were one of the people who it occurred to and you were to walk around campus, like every 10 feet seeing one of those posters?
If I were one of the people that it happened to, even that poster of that ambiguousness would affect me. Any kind of, talk of it.
I'm sorry, in a good way or bad way?
Probably in a bad way if it just happened. Even though, it's awful for the person, I think for the sake of the community, there should be a little bit more information.
So
it's not, that's up to pub safety. And,
That is an issue that I think could be brought up with Great Prince.
Was there? There was a mass email about the first one.
So, the last question, which I save for last because I think it is the eternal question that at least a significant amount of the population has asked for generations and will continue to ask for a very long time, and which I think we should answer surrounding the food, is why are boys so dumb? Hey, if everybody has any answers, come on over.
Is there someone answer that question? Why are girls so confusing? So, get the whole.
There's someone answer both those questions.
Both sexes are equally fucked up in different ways.
No, I wouldn't.
I feel that the girls tend to overemphasize
more than that. Yeah, I was going to say they're both
fucked up.